Barius grabbed the end of Jig's rope, looped it once around his wrist, and tugged. Jig scrambled to his feet. Rihanna still hadn't picked the lock, but Barius' patience had run out. Darnak drew his club and moved to stand behind Rihanna. Risland remained where he was, resting against the far wall. His eyes were alert, though, Jig noticed. He watched not the door, but the other adventurers. Jig looked away. Three bodies peering over Rihanna's shoulder did nothing to help her concentration. Her pick slipped, and she turned to glare at the dwarf.
Bad enough that my head pounds from your ale. I don't need your breath adding to my drunkenness.
Your pardon?
This'll be easy if I wasn't seeing double. Hard enough to pick one lock, let alone two.
Rihanna grabbed a second tool, a thicker, angled rod, which she jabbed into the keyhole. Keeping the first pick in place, she turned the larger rod, and the door popped inward. Rihanna scrambled back to avoid the door and fell. Darnak stepped over her body, club held high.
Nothing.
The others moved toward the doorway as Darnak raised the lantern, shining a beam of light down the corridor. Where the goblin tunnels had been smooth obsidian, this hall shone with the same black marble as the room behind them. Large panels of marble covered floor, walls, even the ceiling. Only the threads of red in the marble and thin stripes of glittering silver mortar gave the passage any color. The labor that must have gone into building these tunnels didn't impress Jig as much as the fact that they were so clean. Not a trace of dust marred the gleaming tiles. After all these years, he would have expected the floor to lose its polish. Either the necromancer used magic to maintain his domain, or else nobody ever walked these tunnels. Jig decided to believe the first explanation.
Nice.
Dangerous. Each panel is wide enough to cover a pit, like the one we encountered above. We must be cautious.
Cautious meant sending the goblin ahead to trigger any traps. As Jig moved to the front of the party, he consoled himself with the fact that Barius kept a firm grip on the rope trailing from his neck. If the floor did fall away, at least the human would be able to haul his choking body back out. Assuming, of course, that Jig didn't break his neck in the fall. Once again, they made slow progress as a result of Darnak's compulsiveness. The dwarf had taken it upon himself to draw each individual tile on his map.
If one of these squares hides a trap, we'll be wanting to know which one.
This time, Jig had no complaints. The sluggish pace meant that he could test each tile before putting his full weight on it. He would press his back against the wall for balance and extend his toes to tap the next tile up the hall. If that felt safe, he ran to the opposite wall and did the same on that side. As the corridor was three tiles wide, this procedure eliminated all but one. The middle tile he simply tested with the ball of his foot. If something happened, he would be off balance, but without a convenient wall to lean against, he had no choice in the matter. Naturally, it was the middle tile that turned out to be trapped. The corner sank a half inch. Jig leaped back, flailing his arms for balance.
Which tile?
Darnak hurried to Jig's side, counting as he went.
10, 11, 12. The 13th tile, center one, right?
That had been too close. Jig glanced to either side, waiting for the trap to spring. Darnak's quill scratched furiously as he penned a warning about the tile. Barius stepped closer, shoving Jig to one side. With his sword, Barius prodded the corner Jig had stepped on. But nothing else happened. He tried again, harder this time.
Perhaps it's stuck. What could be more useless than a trap door that refuses to open when triggered by its prey?
Smudge flashed red-hot. Darnak whirled, blinding Jig as the lantern's beam passed over his eyes. The rope tugged Jig forward, and he crashed into the wall and stayed there, out of the way. Whatever was coming, Barius had decided to keep both hands free to deal with it. Jig blinked and squinted. Rihanna had stayed behind, next to him. He could make out the shapes of Darnak and the humans moving back up the tunnel. Beyond, more humanoid figures moved in silence. Jig saw the glint of weapons from the newcomers.
What are they? My vision's bad enough without the party blocking my view.
Rihanna had drawn her stolen knife, and her chest moved rapidly as her breathing quickened. She and Jig both jumped at the first clang of steel against steel.
But what is it they're fighting? Where did they come from? Probably has something to do with the trapped panel, but what?
As if in response, the wall Jig had been leaning against vanished. One moment it was there, and the next, Jig was falling back into a small alcove. He looked up. A pale, dead face looked down at him.
Oh, nothing but an old corpse.
The corpse raised a spiked mace to strike. Jig rolled aside as the mace crashed into the floor beside him. Smudge sprang free and hid behind the creature, out of sight. Before the thing could attack again, Jig scrambled out of the alcove. He collided with Rihanna. The panel had disappeared from the opposite wall as well. Unlike the first creature, however, the inhabitant of this alcove was truly dead. The skin had decayed and flaked away, and one skeletal arm lay on the floor.
There's another behind me!
Whatever it was, it had begun life as a human, to judge from the rounded ears. Like the rest of its flesh, those ears were white and shrunken. Rusted chainmail hung loosely from its shoulders, reinforced with metal plates at the knees and elbows, and the clouded eyes moved to track Jig's movements. The mace came up again. Rihanna fled farther up the corridor. Jig started to follow, only to slip on the smooth marble. He rolled out of the way of another attack. Unfortunately, he rolled into the thing's legs. It kicked Jig in the stomach, knocking him to the other side of the hall. Doubled over, Jig could still see from the corner of his eye as the creature closed in. But it stopped a few paces away. The skull head turned to the right, then the left. Jig swore he saw the skin of the forehead wrinkle as if in confusion. As the creature turned around, he saw why. Beneath its armor, the creature wore tattered rags that had no doubt been magnificent finery. Somehow, those scraps had begun to burn. Orange tendrils of flame danced beneath the armor, slowly climbing up the creature's body, while the threads blackened and shriveled. As the fire grew, the creature began to slap the flames, but to no effect. Its own skin began to burn as it tried without success to extinguish itself. Whether it was truly dead, or if some spark of life remained to guide it, Jig didn't know. But the creature was apparently able to make decisions. Having realized it couldn't stop the fire, it turned again towards Jig. A few more minutes and it would be consumed, but that was plenty of time to dispose of one little goblin. Jig scooted backward until he bumped into the bones that had fallen out of the far alcove. In his desperation, he grabbed the arm bone and flung it at the approaching creature. It ducked out of the way and the bone slid into the far alcove. The far panel reappeared. Jig stared. The panel was really back. He could see the flames reflected in the polished marble.
Oh, that's how they seal the alcoves after they kill off the intruders. In here!
Rihanna just stared at him, looking confused. He grabbed her arm and threw her into the open alcove behind him. Even as she collided with the skeleton, her weight triggered the magic. The marble panel began to shimmer into existence. The creature swung as Jig leaped. Passing through the shadowy panel was like swimming against a strong current or struggling against a whirlpool. His head and arms were already inside. He tried to push against the panel to help him through, but his hands sank uselessly into the half-formed marble.
What will happen if the panel finishes appearing before I'm inside?
Jig reached out blindly and caught Rihanna's arm. He pulled as hard as he could. He made it through, landing on the now ruined skeleton. Blackness. Not even a sliver of light passed through the panel.
I hate this.
Jig didn't bother to respond. He wasn't too happy with the situation either, but at this point, he didn't know what he could do about it. At least they were safe. So he continued to listen to the fighting, wondering which side would come out alive, so to speak. Only then did it occur to him that he didn't know how to open the alcove from the inside. The dead warriors probably didn't mind being trapped here for years at a time, but Jig did.
I would have ended up like that.
Remembering the hard, tight feel of her severed finger, Jig thought she was right.
Those things have the same shriveled look to them. This whole place could be nothing more than a trap, one designed to provide new corpses for the necromancer.
I hate this! Can't we make a light?
Oh, Barius neglected to give me a lantern of my own. Riesland hasn't taken the time to teach me magic, so I'm afraid we're stuck in the darkness.
Don't push me, goblin. I'd wager my knife can find your hall even in the dark. If never known darkness like this. Outside there were always the stars. When I scraped together enough gold for a night indoors, or when some innkeeper took me in out of the snow for a night, I always slept in the common rooms with the fire blazing.
I've never seen the stars myself.
Jig tried to stretch out, but the end of his rope was still looped around his arm.
What's that?
Me!
Jig quickly unwound the rope from his arm. The noose was too tight for his fingers to pry loose. He felt around for a thin bone to use as a lever. Barius would be furious if he freed himself, but Barius might also be dead, and Jig was tired of being tied up. He found two long bones that might work. One was too thin, but the other had a broken end with a jagged point. This could make a passable weapon. Not as nice as his sword, but better than nothing. As he felt along the other end of the dry, scaly bones, his fingers touched a loop of cold metal. A bracelet? It was wide enough. The oval ring was as wide as his upper arm, but might fit snugly around a human's wrist. He could feel hammer marks on the metal and a bit of engraving on the inside. That was odd.
Who engraved jewelry on the inside, leaving the outside bare and ugly?
Still, maybe he could swap it to Barius for his sword. He slid the bracelet onto his arm above the elbow.
Sure, and after Barius returns my sword, I'll get Reisland to teach me that fire-shooting spell. Maybe I'll follow it all up by asking Darnak for his wineskin.
Jig grabbed the bone and shoved it through the noose, close to the knot. The point scratched his neck, and he couldn't pry the knot too hard without choking himself. He tried again, giving up only when blue spots of light began to float across his vision. Had the knot loosened at all? He couldn't tell. He fell back against the wall.
What are you doing?
Cutting my throat!
What?
Tossing the bone away, he went back to searching the floor. Whoever this was, he had died wearing that bracelet. The other creatures still bore weapons and armor.
What else might this one have with him?
Jig hadn't had time to look at things very closely before flinging himself into the alcove.
If anyone cuts your throat, it should be me.
Jig continued to search through the bones. His search turned up a few small coins, an old belt, and a pair of boots that came all the way to Jig's knees. But no knife or sword. Nothing he could use to free himself from Barius's noose. The boots he kept, even though they were a bit too large. Their hard soles would be too loud on the floor, so he tore them off. The threads were loose and broke easily. In the process, he ripped the seams by the toes of one boot, but that didn't matter. They were still better than bare feet, especially down here, where he didn't know what he might be stepping on. More importantly, they gave him a way to hide his bracelet. Goblins had large feet, but skinny limbs, and with a bit of force, Jig shoved the bracelet around his ankle. It might pinch a bit when he walked, but this way Barius wouldn't take it from him. The belt tore apart when he tried to use it. The leather had rotted too badly to be worth anything.
What are you doing, Jig?
Trying to find a knife.
Why? Didn't you already cut your throat? Or are goblins as clumsy at suicide as with everything else?
For this news, I want it off!
Jig was jerked sideways by the noose. His head smacked into the wall. His fingers clawed at the rope as he tried to gain himself another breath.
This noose?
Yes.
Rihanna stood, pulling Jig with her.
If you had been tied up back there, I'd still have two working hands. They were coming back to heal me. Barius told me Darnak had prayed for a spell that would cure the poison.
Jig squirmed and reached behind his head. His fingers found Rihanna's wrists. He squeezed, but she was too strong. He couldn't pry her grip loose. His hand slipped past her wrist and up her sleeve. She figured out what he was doing and pulled back, but he had already grabbed the hilt of a knife, the one she had stolen from Barius. As she leaped away, the knife stayed with Jig. Seconds later, he was free of the noose.
I can still kill you. For all you know, I could have a dozen more daggers stashed away.
But she didn't attack. She was afraid, Jig realized. Afraid of him. They had fought, and Jig had won. And he was too tired and sore to give one whit about his victory. He kept one ear aimed at the corridor so he could hear what was happening outside. The other remained pointed at Rihanna. He thought she was bluffing about the knife, but there were plenty of sharp bones in here. He wouldn't let her surprise him again, which was why he couldn't allow himself to sleep, even though he was so tired that the bone-littered floor felt almost comfortable. The fighting couldn't go on for much longer. If the adventurers won and came back for Jig and Rihanna, they would be free soon. Otherwise, it didn't matter if Rihanna killed him or not.
They've stopped. Should we call for help?
I don't know. If those corpses won, they might not be too eager to help us. Especially after we burned one of them up like that.
What happened to him anyway? Where did the fire come from?
My guess is that Smudge got hungry. I haven't fed him since yesterday. Fire spiders like their meat cooked. Not much meat on those things, but I guess he decided it was better than starving.
Jig pounded against the marble panel with his dagger.
What are you doing? You said yourself that those things might still be out there.
Either something lets us out, or else you get to stay in here with me until we both die.
A few seconds later, Rihanna grabbed a bone and joined him. The panel faded to shadow. Jig squinted as light pierced the blackness of the alcove. Outside, he saw Darnak's stocky silhouette, waiting, club held high. Before the panel could vanish entirely, Jig moved his stolen knife behind his back, handle toward Rihanna.
Take it.
Which she did. Jig's relieved grin tightened with pain as she sliced his fingers in the process. Rihanna slipped past Jig and smiled in passing. Elves. They could be as bad as goblins sometimes. Jig clenched his fist to close the cut and hoped nobody would notice. Sweat streaked Darnak's face and plastered curls of hair to his forehead, and he sported a stained red bandage on his arm.
Come on. We've regrouped back this way to catch our breath. Undead bastards gave us quite a fight.
Jig could see that for himself. Of the creature Smudge had burned, nothing remained but a skeleton that lay in the middle of a man-shaped pile of ash. Jig felt thankful for his new boots, since he had to walk through those remains to catch up with the others. He tried to ignore the crunch of his footsteps as he followed Darnak. Smudge scurried over and climbed Jig's leg. He reached down to scratch Smudge's head.
Ah, good spider. Very good spider. A warrior spider. And still a hungry spider, I suspect. I doubt you found much meat on that thing. Don't you worry. I'll get something for you to eat.
The remains of the other creatures cluttered the corridor. One had been hacked to pieces, probably by Barius's sword. Another still jerked and twitched, as if trying to continue the attack. Darnak gave the body a lazy smack in passing, and the thing fell still. As for the rest, even Jig could figure out how they had died. Only Rysland's magic killed with such finality. These bodies were the least damaged, but each showed a large blackened hole where the hearts should have been. Was there any limit to what Rysland could do? Jig counted four who had fallen to the wizard's fire. Jig joined Darnak and the others in the room where they had first come through the whirlpool. He braced himself for Barius's outburst as he passed through the door. No doubt the prince would yell and threaten and demand to know how Jig could have been so stupid as to trigger the trap. But Barius was in no shape to yell. The prince lay in the middle of the room next to the water pillar. His shirt and armor were piled to one side, and his white skin was pale even for a human. Bandages covered his stomach. Another bound his left shoulder. Both were wet with blood.
Is he dead?
Ah, he's not dead. Just tried a riposte when he should have parried in four. Don't worry, he'll be his charming self soon enough. Earthmaker won't allow us to fail, not from a few scratches like that.
Earthmaker sounds like a useful person to have around.
Why? He's one who rewards his followers. Over 100 years, I've offered up my sacrifices and prayed to him for guidance. Far be it from me to guess the mind of a god, but I'm thinking he'll not repay a century of service by letting us all die here.
Yet for all your devotion, your magic is still limited to those powers your god grants you. To be so dependent on the whim of a deity would be disturbing, to say the least.
It's called faith. And it's a far cry safer than your wizardry. When's the last time you heard about a priest blowing himself up after trying a new spell and waving three fingers instead of four?
They glared at each other, the dwarf's tiny eyes not leaving Rysland's glowing ones. They might have continued for hours had Barius not stirred.
Forgive my interruption, but could your time not be better spent by aiding one who still bleeds from his wounds?
Oh, aye.
Darnak knelt next to Barius. One hand covered the stomach wound, which looked like the more serious injury.
I'd love to see your high and mighty wizardry cure this.
After a while, he leaned back.
He'll need a few hours of rest. The Earthmaker has closed the cuts, but it'll take a bit of Barius' strength to finish the job.
Perhaps your god is busy with other matters.
Aye. The whole world of prayers. And you think he can spend all his time on one dwarf?
Jig ignored the rest of the discussion. Several times now, Darnak had healed wounds that would have crippled a goblin.
What would it be like to have that kind of power available all the time? To know that no matter how grave the injury, a journey to the closest priest could fix you in a matter of hours.
At first, the idea seemed wondrous, and Jig had to fight off a surge of jealousy. The more he thought about it, though, the more he had to question if that sort of power would necessarily be a good thing.
What would bullies like Parik do if they knew their victims could recover from almost anything? Instead of tossing rodents into the muck pot, why not set me myself on fire? Wouldn't it be far more entertaining to spend the afternoon playing Flame the Goblin? Especially if the victim could come back the next day, good as new and ready to play the game all over again. But maybe gods are smarter than that. The fact that the gods have always ignored goblin kind might be a sign that they understand how much trouble a magic-wielding goblin could cause.
Darnak dug into his pack for food and came up with a new loaf of bread, which he passed around to the party. He also found several more strips of meat, as well as a small wheel of cheese. This he dusted off and cut into 5 pieces. The cheese was good, if a bit strong. As before, Jig received only 2 pieces of the meat. He would have to endure bread again if he wanted to fill his belly. Rihanna, he noticed, had taken some of her bread and tucked it into a shirt, along with a little meat. Saving something for later? That was probably a good idea. He waited until nobody was looking, then slipped 1 strip of meat into his boot. The other he tore into with relish, eating half with 1 bite. As he swallowed, he noticed Smudge. The fire spider quivered on Jig's knee, and all 8 eyes followed the meat in his hand.
I don't suppose I could interest you in some bread?
He held out a piece. Smudge actually heated up a bit as he scooted away, confirming Jig's impression of the so-called food.
Right.
Resigning himself to a meal of cheese and bread, he tossed the remaining meat onto the floor.
Yeah.
Smudge sprang. His legs landed to either side of the meat like a cage. Seconds later, the smell of burning meat drifted through the air as Smudge cooked his food.
Enjoy it.
Jig brushed a bit of dirt off the cheese and took another bite. By alternating cheese and bread and drinking a fair amount of water, he managed to finish off the meal. But he would have given so much for just 1 cup of Golaka's stew. Even day-old stew, the kind you had to skin before you ate, would have been heaven sent.
If I had the rod of creation, I'd use it to make some real food.
Another attack like that, and we won't even make it to the dragon's lair, let alone find the rod.
Will there be more traps?
You're the burglar of this party. What say you?
All those dead things couldn't have come from one little trap lock. The necromancer could have traps everywhere. He could have armies waiting to pour out of the walls next time. Or maybe he set spells to turn us all into creatures like that. Even if we found every trick panel and poison needle, how are we going to find those traps hidden by magic?
Our elven thief has a point. Perhaps she begins to learn wisdom. No doubt the necromancer's traps litter this place like horse dung on the highway.
A beautiful image, Prince.
Brother, I think we must call upon your art once more. Can you guide us through this maze of traps and death?
Perhaps we should rest a mite longer. There must be another way to find the necromancer and the path to Strahm's domain. Would anyone be knowing a poem, a story, or even a rumor about this place? Anything at all, no matter how strange or confusing?
I know one, but it wouldn't help.
Let us decide what is helpful. Perhaps we can intuit some vital fact that you never stop to consider.
I don't think so. It's not much of a poem.
Enough protests! Goblins haven't the intellect to find those kernels of truth hidden within the old poems.
10 little goblins walked off to drink their wine. Up came the necromancer, and there were 9. They screamed and they hid and they ran away, but those goblins came back the very next day. 9 little goblins went looking for a mate. Up came the necromancer, then there were 8. They screamed and they hid and they ran away, but those goblins came back the very next day. 8 little goblins...
Enough!
It's more of a children's poem, really.
Barius had apparently recovered from his injuries. For he pushed himself up and walked over to glare at Jig.
That is the extent of your knowledge regarding our foe? You've lived here your entire life, and the best you can do is 10 little goblins?
What about ye? You knew what you'd be facing down here. Did you bring anything to help you against the necromancer, huh?
The prince's eyes widened. One hand dropped to his belt, closer to the hilt of his sword than Jig was comfortable with. Barius pointed to his brother.
I brought him!
A good thing for all of us you did, too. I saw the bodies in the hall. Your brother killed 4 of those things. If he weren't there, they would have killed you as easily as you killed my patrol. If you ask me, Riceland should start leading this party before you lead us into another trap.
Nobody moved. Over the course of Jig's rant, Barius's face had turned red, then purple. Jig watched him curiously. He hadn't realized humans could change color. Perhaps they were part lizard. Jig had never seen Barius, or any human for that matter, get this mad. Still, angry people all seemed to react in the same way. Jig braced himself. Barius's open hand caught Jig on the side of his face and knocked him to the ground.
What are you doing, lads? He's unarmed.
I'm challenging this goblin to a duel.
A what? What's the deal?
Have your wits deserted you, man? We're in the home of the necromancer, and you want to stand around fighting duels?
A duel is a battle of honor, to the death. As the challenged party, you have the choice of weapons.
What? Garnak, is he serious?
You've insulted my honor. Choose your weapon. Knives, swords, clubs, even quarterstaves. I saw a pair of spears we could use. Your presence has plagued this party long enough, goblin.
Riesland looked bored with it all, and Darnak was shaking his head in disbelief. Rihanna rolled her eyes.
Ugh, men.
Nobody moved to intervene.
Enough dallying. Choose your weapon.
Darius waved his arms in large circles, presumably some sort of warm-up ritual. He then practiced a few lunges against an imaginary foe.
Choose.
He can't just kill me. Not with everyone watching. That means he has to play by the rules. If I win, will you let me carry a weapon again? And no more of your stupid ropes either.
Anything you like. Ask for my future barony or my firstborn child. It matters not. But ask, and let us be done with it.
Freedom and my sword. I don't want anything else.
Very well. Select your weapon.
Fangs.
What? You can't choose fangs.
Why not? It's a game goblin children play. We call it rack-a-jack. You bat one another on the arms and legs, and the winner is the one who goes the longest without crying.
Jig smiled and fingered the 3-inch fangs on his lower jaw.
If you want, you can go first.
Jig patted the short sword at his side, reassured by its weight. Not that it would be much use if they were attacked again. He had liked watching Barius sputter and curse after Jig named his weapon for the duel. Darnak had to physically stop Barius from slicing Jig's head from his body. Seeing the haughty prince back out of his duel and formally ask Jig's forgiveness was worth almost all the pain and indignity he had endured on this quest. After that, Darnak told him about the fight, how Barius had cut down his first opponent, only to have it rise again and slash Barius's shoulder from behind. Stabbing the creature in the throat hadn't even inconvenienced it. Whatever these things were, they needed to be hacked apart, bludgeoned to a pulp, or dealt with by magic. Or by a hungry fire spider, Jig had added silently. Riesland was walking at a slow, steady pace. He stopped before the trapped tile, gestured at it with one hand.
Don't step here.
I think we're already knowing that much.
Riesland ignored him. He pointed out 2 more tiles before reaching the first fork in the corridor. Without hesitation, he took the left turn. Jig wondered if Riesland even noticed the other hallway, or if he saw anything but the path his magic showed him. He didn't seem to see or hear the rest of the party, much to Darnak's dismay. He sketched as fast as he could, but Jig could see that his careful map was devolving into a few lines and arrows.
How can I make a good map if you're racing about like a tomcat on the prowl? Can't even keep track of which tiles we're to avoid. Probably trigger every one if we have to come back this way in a hurry.
Ahead, Risland raised his hand and brought the party to a halt. He gestured at the right wall.
Another passageway. Here.
In addition to the traps, there were a number of secret passages, like the one Risland had just found. Everything was constructed of the same marble panels, and from time to time Risland would point out one at random. Nobody knew how they were supposed to open, for the wizard's magic allowed him to bypass the normal mechanism. Even as he pointed, his eyes would flash, and the panel would crash onto the ground, often breaking into thick shards from the impact. Jig got down and crawled through the hole into the secret passageway, followed by Rihanna.
That could at least make the doors taller.
You should mention that to the necromancer when we find him. I'm sure he'd love to hear architectural suggestions from a goblin.
Rihanna hadn't been quite as mean to Jig since his aborted duel. In fact, she had laughed harder than Jig had ever seen, which only added to Barius's fury. But that didn't mean she had forgiven him either. She merely flipped back and forth as to whom she hated more, Jig or Barius. With Barius up ahead, following his brother, that left Jig as a target for her frustrations. At least the corridor beyond had opened up to let him walk upright and put a few more feet between himself and her barbs.
Another trap.
This time it was a thin wire stretched across the floor. Jig's poor vision meant he couldn't see it at all, and he felt like a fool as Darnak guided his legs in an exaggerated motion over the wire. As Jig and Rihanna stepped over the wire, Darnak scowled at his map and drew a quick turn, then made a line to indicate the tripwire.
Do you think this is what the necromancer wants?
What's that? Do I think what?
Well, he has to know we're here, and he probably knows we've got a wizard. So, wouldn't it make sense to force the wizard to use up his power before we actually face the necromancer? I mean, that way, when we finally get through this maze, the necromancer will be able to kill Risland like a bug.
It's possible.
Darnak hurried ahead, forcing Jig and Rihanna to jog to keep up. When they were closer to the humans and their lantern, he slowed his pace again to draw.
That's why we all have to be ready to strike. Only two ways for the likes of us to deal with wizards of the necromancer's caliber. Run away, or hit him with a rock.
I don't have a rock.
Figure of speech. Your sword there will do the job. The trick is to take him out before he can use his magic. Hard and fast, with no hesitation. Let him get a spell off and it's your death. I'm afraid you're right about Risland being at the end of his rope. So, if you wait for him to save your blue hide, you'll not last long.
What about your magic? Won't Earthmaker help you beat the necromancer?
It doesn't work that way. Earthmaker wants us to choose our own path. He can guide us and give us strength, but where mortals come into conflict, he'll not interfere.
Darnak stopped and cocked his head. His face wrinkled like a raisin.
Something's not right. The tunnel changes up ahead.
How can you tell?
He's a dwarf.
As if that explained everything. Rihanna hurried up to tell the others. They soon found that Darnak was right. Barius and his brother stopped, lantern held in front of them. When Jig caught up and saw why they had paused, it was all he could do to keep from throwing up. Not only did the tunnel change, it ended completely. The walls and ceiling stopped, and the cramped passage opened into a huge cavern. The top was too far to see, and the bottom... Jig's stomach knotted just thinking about it. At the far side, he could just see a glimmer of reflected light, presumably from the marble paneling the necromancer seemed to like so much. All they had to do was cross.
Bottomless pit, you think?
'Twould be my guess. Let us be on our way.
Over that?
Good to know that Jig wasn't the only one who had problems with this. True, the paneled floor continued across the pit, creating a sort of bridge. The problem was that only the panels continued. As far as he could see, they rested on nothing but air. Only thin lines of silver mortar held the panels together. Although Jig knew nothing about bridges, he guessed this wasn't how they were supposed to look. Each panel was no thicker than Jig's thumb. While the others pondered the safest way to cross, Jig dropped to his hands and knees and crawled to the tunnel's edge. Peering over the edge, he saw nothing but blackness beneath the bridge. Wind brushed past his face and pushed his ears back. The walls of the pit were smooth, black stone. Not polished like the marble, but still too smooth to climb.
What were you expecting? A nice ladder and a sign saying, "Here's the safe bridge for goblins only"?
Something landed on Jig's back. He rolled away, kicking wildly at his attacker. Smudge slipped off his shoulder and started to fall. Jig barely managed to grab one of the spider's suddenly hot legs. Once he was back in the tunnel, Smudge scurried a good 6 feet away from the edge and cowered there. The attacker turned out to be the end of a rope.
Stupid, cowardly creatures.
Jig noticed they had each wrapped a loop of rope about their waists. Donak helped Jig up and tied the rope around his waist with a sure hand.
Best to be safe when crossing these things. Earthmaker willing, we'll not be needing this. But I've not yet seen a bottomless pit that didn't have some nastiness hidden away, waiting to knock you to your doom.
You've crossed these before?
Oh, aye. Back when I was a lad, there wasn't a wizard around who didn't conjure up his own bottomless pit. They're less common these days, but you still find them lying about in older labyrinths and lairs. They're useful things. If you can cut a shaft through the entire place, you've got some ventilation. Otherwise, the air gets stale and things start to die. Not to mention a stink. Truth is, they're not really bottomless. Yeah, you fall for a while, no doubt, but sooner or later you find the bottom. A real bottomless pit takes too much magic.
Onward!
Barius walked close behind Risland, lantern held high to light up the bridge. Brianna followed, then Donak, still scribbling at his map, and Jig brought up the rear. That meant he would be the last one to step onto those floating tiles. He watched as each member of the group stepped onto the bridge, and each time he expected the tiles to crumble away at the touch of their feet. The tiles didn't even wiggle. The rope went taut, tugging Jig closer to the edge. Another 3 steps, and he'd be on the bridge.
What if I fall? What if the wind gets stronger and blows me over the edge? Will the others try to pull me up? Yeah, more likely they would cut the rope and let me fall. Why else would they put me last? This way they could cut me loose without sacrificing themselves.
2 more steps.
Maybe the bridge only works for certain races. Will it support a goblin as well as a human? Magic is funny that way.
Jig had a sudden vivid memory of the marble panels that had hidden their dead attackers.
Those felt solid enough, up until they vanished. Is there a trigger to make these panels disappear as well?
1 step.
Of course. The spell must be designed to wait until the last person steps out of the tunnel. Only then will it vanish. I'm the last one!
As soon as he took that next step, they would all fall to their deaths. He was the only one who could save them. He had to get this knot undone. His fingers clawed at the rope, but the dwarf had tied a good knot, and it wouldn't budge.
Wait! Please wait!
The rope jerked him forward, and he fell onto the bridge. The solid, unmoving bridge. Jig froze. Ahead, the others glanced back impatiently. The tiles hadn't faded. He wasn't falling. He was trembling so much he couldn't stand up, but he wasn't falling.
You planning to walk, or were you expecting us to drag you across?
Jig tried to rise. The bridge was wide enough. 3 tiles wide, which was more than twice the length of a goblin. He would be okay. All he had to do was stand up and walk after the others.
I'm coming!
Jig rose to his knees, glanced over the edge, and promptly dropped back to the floor. Crawling would be just fine, he decided. Smudge crawled everywhere, and he never lost his balance. At that moment, Jig would have been happier with 8 legs, but he would be all right with 4, he hoped. About 30 feet ahead, Risland pointed to a tile in the center.
Illusion.
What a nasty trick. Jig chewed his lip as he neared the false tile. He would have to go around. The tile looked as solid as the rest. He touched a finger to the marble surface and watched it pass right through. If Risland hadn't seen the trap, they would have fallen.
Watch us, not the bottom.
Jig crawled forward a few inches and curled his fingers around the edges of the tile for stability, but that only reminded him that a single tile hung between him and the abyss. To his right was the false tile, to his left, nothing. He hoped the magic and the mortar were strong enough. Jig clenched his teeth and continued forward until he passed the false tile and was back in the center of the bridge where it was safe. Relatively speaking, at least.
Good job. Now, let's be on.
Jig nodded. He could do this. He could make it. They were going to be okay. That was when the attack started. At first, Jig thought the fluttering was a figment of his frightened imagination. A trick of the wind, perhaps. He certainly couldn't see anything when he looked around. The first squeal, so loud, Jig grabbed his ears and folded them flat to his head, told him this was no trick. Something really was out there in the blackness.
Don't stop! Keep your eyes open! We're halfway there! If we can make it to the other side, we'll be safer!
Keep your eyes open! As if I do this sort of thing blindfolded!
Jig started to crawl, only to stop when the next squeal deafened him. He couldn't crawl and cover his ears at the same time.
Why did it have to be so loud?
Clasping his hands to his ears, Jig stood up and hurried after the others. They had gone another 20 yards when something large and black swooped toward Darnak. Huge, leathery wings battered the dwarf's head, pushing him backward. Darnak dropped his quill and struck out with his fist, knocking the thing away and letting Jig see it clearly in the lantern light. They were bats, bigger than any bat Jig had seen. But they could be nothing else. Their bodies were almost as big as Darnak himself, and the wings stretched at least 10 feet to either side. Another swooped down behind Jig, giving him a close look at their bristled, pig-like faces and a row of needle-sharp teeth. Jig grabbed his sword and swung wildly. The tip grazed the bat's wing and sent it spinning out of sight beneath the bridge. More bats were coming down behind him. He ran to join the others, only to drop through another illusory tile. His finger slipped, and then the rope jerked him to a halt. Jig clutched the rope with both hands and hoped Darnak wouldn't follow him through. The rope tore skin from Jig's armpits as he dangled helplessly. Smudge flattened himself to Jig's shoulder, legs clinging to the leather pad, and Jig could feel the heat on his cheek.
Don't touch the rope!
The last thing he needed was for the stupid fire spider to crawl around and set the rope on fire. Fortunately, Smudge appeared to be stiff with fear. Something moved nearby. Jig couldn't see very well since the bridge blocked most of the light, but the shifting shadows in front of him took on the ugly form of a bat only a few feet away. Even if his sword weren't lying useless on the bridge above, he wouldn't have dared release his grip on the rope long enough to use it. So the next time the bat came near, he kicked as hard as he could. His boot caught the bat's snout and it looped away. The movement started him twisting. Another bat flew at him. It clobbered him in the head with a wing. The bat's small claws reached out but missed. Now he was spinning in the other direction. Much more of this and he'd lose what little food he had eaten. Jig twisted his head, trying to see where the next attack would come from. Nothing but blackness. Wind buffeted Jig's body as a bat flew up to land on the edge of the bridge. Then a huge, senseless body plunged past Jig's left side. That would be Darnak teaching the bats the futility of a ground-based attack. The rope jerked up a foot, costing Jig another strip of skin. Jig's fingers tightened on the rope as he lurched closer toward the bridge. Another bat came at him from behind, and Jig kicked again. Then thick fingers grabbed his wrist and yanked him onto the bridge. Darnak nodded sharply. Then he was off to whack another bat. Rihanna stood close behind Barius. The bats had apparently learned to avoid the human's flashing sword. Ryslind waited a little way beyond, arms folded. One bat flew down behind him, only to bounce off an invisible wall. It landed on the bridge, took a few stunned steps, then teetered over the edge. Jig spotted his sword sitting close to the side of the bridge. He grabbed it and turned to join the others, for all the good he could do. He began to walk, testing the tiles as he went. He made it about 10 feet before the rope grew taut. Donak was still behind him, merrily crushing bat skulls and breaking bat wings. Jig could no more pull the dwarf along than drag the mountain itself. Moving slowly, Donak and Varius escorted the others toward Riseland. From there, they inched their way to the other side. The bats launched a desperate attack near the end. They flew as a group, no longer bothering with claws as they tried to physically knock the party off the bridge. It might have worked if they hadn't picked Riseland as their first target. Bats bounced in all directions, like water splashing from a boulder. Jig saw Riseland smirk as one bat spun off and crashed into the chasm wall. A few more steps, and they were through. Once they passed into the tunnel, the bats gave up and returned to whatever they did when they weren't attacking adventurers. As he followed the others, Jig decided he was just as happy the bats couldn't escape their pit. His hearing returned slowly, bringing with it a splitting headache. Maybe there was an advantage to the humans' tiny ears, after all. Neither they nor the dwarfs seemed to suffer any after-effects of the deafening shrieks. Donak had healed him before, Jig remembered. He hurried up to Donak. His hand went out to tug the dwarf's sleeve. Just then, Riseland stumbled. The wizard dropped to his knees and pressed the palms of his hands against his ears. The tattoos on his hands writhed in the light. A strange pressure filled the air, and Jig's skin tingled.
Get back and leave me alone!
Varius stepped away from his brother's side. Brianna backed off until she had put Varius between herself and Riseland.
Get away!
What's that? Abandon my quest? Surely you jest, brother. If this is no more than a feeble ploy to frighten me off and allow you to seize the rod, I shall be most incensed.
Not good.
Donak's pack slid to the ground, nearly smashing Jig's foot. He noticed the goblin standing there and handed him the lantern.
Hold this and stay out of the way.
What can we do?
You can shut your flap and let me work.
Donak grabbed his holy amulet and dropped to one knee.
Come on, Earthmaker. I know I've asked a lot lately, but if you'd be giving us a hand again, I'd be mighty grateful. The idiot boy strained himself again. If it were up to me, I'd say he dug his own tunnel, so let him find his own way out. But you know I can't be doing that. I'm sworn to protect them, and he'd kill us all in his madness. You wouldn't let your humble servant die of dark magic, would you? Give me an honest fight, at good odds. Not this invisible art that slips past an honest blade like smoke.
Donak stopped breathing. Jig wouldn't have noticed if he hadn't been standing with his ear practically at the dwarf's mouth.
Donak?
Jig looked around, but the others were with Riseland. Donak's face and lips had taken on a bluish tinge.
How long can dwarves hold their breath? Wait, if Donak dies, the others will find me standing over his body. How am I going to explain that? Donak, wake up!
Jig grabbed the dwarf's shoulder and shook him. Rather, he tried to shake him. It was like trying to move a wall. Donak's muscles were hard as rock.
Wow!
Growing braver, Jig poked Donak's chest and arms. No wonder he hadn't worried about a few bats.
Come on, Donak, breathe!
Jig's heart scrambled up into his throat with fright. His ears had noticed something none of the others could possibly have heard. Riseland had gasped for breath at the exact same moment as Donak.
What does that mean? What is it that connected them?
Go see if he's all right. Go on now.
Jig hurried up the hallway. Riseland stood with one hand on the wall for support. Jig's attention had been on Donak, so he didn't know what had happened. That was a shame, for he would have loved to know how Varius had ended up on the floor with a puffed lip. Riseland didn't usually rely on his fists, but maybe in his madness he had made an exception.
Brother?
I'm ready to go on.
With that, the mage straightened his robes, used his sleeve to mop his sweaty face, and walked up the corridor as though nothing had happened. Whatever he had done to Varius was enough to stifle the prince's imperious manner, and he fell in next to Riseland in silence. Jig slowed until he and Donak were walking side by side.
Is this a common thing with wizards?
No, it's not. Never seen anything like it, truth be told. Mind you, Riseland's always been a queer one. But he never warred with himself like that. Makes me wonder if he hasn't taken on more than he can handle with this quest.
They walked in silence down the rightmost of a three-way fork.
What did you do back there?
Eh?
When you prayed, you and Raislin were connected somehow and you stopped breathing.
How?
I didn't mean to listen in, but you were distracted, so I thought someone should watch for more of the creatures.
Something's been draining his strength. Felt it when we first reached the mountain 2 days ago. Been growing ever since. Earthmaker can't help him directly. Wizards don't get along with gods, never have. But through Earthmaker, I can lend him a bit of power and will. There's some who'll be telling you that dwarves have the thickest, hardest heads of any race in this world, and I'll not argue with them. A good thing for Raislin, too, for without my help, I've no doubt he'd have lost himself when he came through that whirlpool. My help, and that of the god, that is.
How long until you can't help him anymore?
Darnak didn't answer. Despite Raislin's magic, they still triggered another trap. So intent was Darnak on mapping every detail of the tunnel that he stepped squarely on a trapped tile, even as he drew that same tile on the map. As before, a panel of the wall flickered and vanished. Another of the corpse-like creatures looked up and raised his sword. Darnak dropped his quill and raised his club. Before he could attack, something flew by and hit the wall of the alcove. This triggered the magic again, and the panel reappeared seconds later. As the marble solidified, Jig imagined he saw a look of annoyance on the creature's sunken face. Darnak stood there, club still raised, mouth still open, as if he didn't know what to do now that his opponent had been taken away. After a few seconds, he lowered his club and glanced back at Rihanna.
I guess that'll work too.
Rihanna had thrown a piece of bread she kept hidden in her shirt. Hard as stone, the bread had been more than enough to activate the magic of the alcove. She smiled sweetly.
But it cost me the remains of my lunch.
Wordlessly, Darnak dug through his pack and handed her a small loaf. Jig grinned, happy to know that bread did indeed serve some useful purpose. They stopped to rest in a small chamber, empty save for a black crystal fountain in the center. A wide pillar rose to Jig's waist. Atop the pillar sat a wide bowl, guarded by four carved dragons perched on the rim. Each one looked almost lifelike, every scale glistening in the light. Their eyes were smooth blue jewels, and their teeth clear glass.
Interesting.
Rihanna smirked. Darnak referred not to the carvings, but to the actual plumbing of the fountain. For each of the dragons stood with a leg cocked, and the water arced from between their legs into the pool at the center. Jig knelt beneath it, staring through the black crystal to learn if it was pure enough to see light from the other side. He could, though the light was faint and diffused. He had never encountered anything like this. The bowl itself was ridged on the underside. The wide rim formed the impression of a dirt trail with rocks and roots and even small plants.
It's beautiful.
Created, no doubt, by goblin artisans.
Don't be drinking that, mind you. Strange day when I find myself warning a goblin not to drink dragon piss.
It's only water.
First rule of adventuring, never drink from strange fountains. Half the time it'll turn you to stone, or shrink you to the size of a roach, or kill you on the spot.
I imagine you would more likely suffer the same fate as those wretched corpses. Were it not, goblin, you can rest assured I would strike you dead at the first sign of such a transformation, rather than permit you to suffer such horrors. Where are the dragons themselves as well, lest they come to life and tear out your throat when you turn your back.
Getting a mite paranoid, aren't you?
Cautious, friend dwarf. In a place such as this, who knows what magic lurks in seemingly innocent things?
Jig was tired of magic. Dead people coming through vanishing walls, giant bats, floating bridges, Raislin talking with two voices, Darnak talking to his hammer. It was enough to make a goblin mad. How was he, with no more than a short sword and his wits, to deal with all this magic? He would have to get some magic of his own. From what Jig had learned about magic, he had two choices. He could try to be like the wizard or the dwarf. Both of them had magic of a sort. Jig only had to figure out which kind of magic he wanted on his side. Tough choice. Learn to talk to the gods or become a freak of a man with tattoos and robes, fighting a losing battle with his own mind. He left the fountain and went to sit with Darnak. Better the lesser of two oddities.
Tell me the gods.
A simple enough request, or so he thought.
Oof.
Barius cringed and moved to the other side of the room. Rihanna followed a few minutes later. Even Risland walked away until he had positioned the fountain between himself and the dwarf.
But to start with, you had the two gods of the beginning. All they did was fight. Spend an eternity with someone and you're bound to get a bit tired of the company. They hurled magic back and forth, trying to get the upper hand, even though they couldn't actually kill each other. The universe was young, and they were dumb as newborns, but powerful. They had all the power in the universe to themselves, you see, but some of it began to leak. And sooner or later, this loose magic came together to form the 21 lower gods.
Darnak ticked off their names one after another, counting on his fingers and toes as he went. That only took him to 20 gods, but Jig didn't bother to ask about the 21st. He didn't try to remember all the names. Not one had fewer than 5 syllables, and they all had some sort of fetish about hyphenation and apostrophes. Really, what kind of name was Korama Alvensk Ak Sithect, anyway? When Darnak first mentioned that one, Jig thought he was hacking up yesterday's dinner.
What about Earthmaker? If the 21 made the world, why didn't you mention him?
Well, Earthmaker didn't actually make the world as such. He came along a bit later, and he was after helping those blessed races who lived in the Earth, dwarves, gnomes, and the like. But he didn't appear until after the Year of Darkness.
The Year of Darkness?
Jig tried to understand the difference between the lower gods and the gods of the beginning and the gods of the elements, but then Darnak would mention something new, like the gods of men, and Jig was back to being confused. He began to wonder if the others would hold it against him if he stabbed Darnak to shut him up, or perhaps it would be easier to turn his sword on himself. Jig interrupted, desperately trying to break the endless flow of words.
How many gods of men?
954, starting with Abrianna the Grey, goddess of storms and sailors. She was born of a union betwixt Taras of the Oak, he's a tree god, and a human woman named... well, her name's not important. Taras appeared to her in the form of a 300-pound tortoise and propositioned her. Gods were always doing strange things back in those days. A right kinky lot, if you ask me. But like any good lass, this girl grabbed the nearest hammer and cracked that tortoise on the back. Split Taras's shell right in two. Did I mention she was a dwarven girl? Anyway, out sprang Abrianna the Grey in a flash of thunder. She was twin to Wodok the Black, god of the deep ocean.
If they were twins, did he come out of the tortoise too?
Nah, he came later. Had something to do with a mortal who fell in love with an acorn. Human, naturally. Wouldn't catch a dwarf pining over an acorn. Pining. Get it?
Are there gods for goblins?
Nah. Gods aren't much for the dark races. Goblins, orcs, ogres, kobolds and the like.
The dark races? Jig liked the sound of that. Intimidating and mysterious. But it didn't help his problem. He listened with one ear as Darnak droned on and on. The dwarf must have studied for years to memorize all of this information. He knew the stories of origin for almost every god. How he managed to keep the divine family tree straight in his head was beyond Jig. Or perhaps family vines would be a better term for the way the relationships twisted and intertwined and looped back on themselves as gods mated with their mothers, sisters, and so on. Jig twisted his ears, trying to filter out the worst of it. There was something Darnak had said before, back when he was healing Barius. Something about Earthmaker being busy with the prayers of an entire world. Too busy to spend all his time on one dwarf. Jig could see two ways to use the power of the gods to his advantage. One would be to become a follower of the most powerful god, one who could hurl thunderbolts and destroy worlds without breaking a sweat. The problem was that such a god wouldn't have much of a use for a mere goblin, which brought Jig to the other option. He could follow a god who had grown unpopular, one with few worshippers, who wouldn't be busy answering other prayers. One who could devote his full attention to people like Jig. One who might even be grateful for a goblin follower.
And then there came the 15 forgotten gods of the War of Shadows.
What was that?
Eh? Oh, the 15 forgotten gods of the War of Shadows.
Who were they?
Well, let me think. They fell out of favor for going up against the two. You can't kill a god, of course, but the two showed them all that you can beat one within an inch of his or her life. Take the Shadow Star. They stripped his mind, flayed his body with blades of lightning, and cast him loose in the desert. May have turned him into a lizard for a while, I'm not sure. He wandered there for 200 years, all but forgotten.
Tell me about him.
Well, Timulus Shadow Star was god of the Autumn Star. When his lady brought snows of winter, Shadow Star lengthened the nights and danced in the darkness.
There was more, but Jig had heard enough. A forgotten god, one with power over the darkness. He didn't understand this idea of longer nights, and he knew nothing of the seasons, but it didn't matter. Jig the Goblin would be a follower of Timulus Shadow Star. They might have stayed there forever, listening to Darnak's endless recitation of divine history. He was determined to tell Jig about every wart on the frog god's back and every copper coin claimed by the god of gamblers. Jig could have done without this demonstration of dwarven stamina. Finally, Barius strolled around the fountain and tapped his boot for attention. He waved at the fountain.
You have not yet completed your map of this room, friend dwarf. Such a creation deserves to be noted. Would you not agree?
Aye, but I've not yet told the goblin of the godless years.
The goblin had already taken the opportunity to scoot away and now hid on the other side of the fountain. He wondered why Barius hadn't intervened an hour ago.
Probably this was one more way to punish me.
If so, Jig hoped the prince would go back to hitting him next time. Still, he felt a strange sense of gratitude to Barius for having rescued him at all. He remained hidden until Darnak finished his map.